This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Good morning. It is time for this week's broadcast of Worcester Magazine, your local connection to the news, views, and events happening in Worcester. Today, we will be reading from the May 8th, 2026 edition of Worcester Magazine. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm Julie Standrovich, reading with Catherine Thornton. Thank you for joining us, and we begin, as usual, with Wisteria. Conversations for Change panel highlights gender, race, and this was written by Margaret Smith. What does it mean to work for justice, greater equity, and opportunities for all community members, including families and youths in need of mentoring and models of leadership? What are the challenges for women, people of color, and community members who have not always had a voice or who have not always been included in important decisions? These were some of the many questions in search of answers that highlighted Conversations for Change, a panel organized by the Worcester Women's History Project and held April 29th at Worcester Public Library. The panel comprised Letitia Amuo, educator and the administrative and executive assistant at Clark University's Mossakowski Institute, Joyce Augustus, founder and president of J. Cassand, Inc., online fashion retail store with a long history of service and leadership in area nonprofits and businesses, and Lydia Fortune, singer and songwriter and retired multicultural services director of Clark University. The audience was greeted by Melinda Marchand, and the panel was moderated by Tina Gaffney, both Worcester Women's History Project members. The panelists answered a series of prepared questions addressed to all panelists, questions crafted for the panelists as individuals, and questions from the audience. In the introduction portion, Fortune said that Black children may benefit from a focus on experiential learning, a process of gaining knowledge and understanding by active situations, including activities, internships, or projects tailored to the right age range. Fortune said, in working in conflict resolution, including peer mediation and bringing together community groups to address conflicts in schools, she noticed that many Black children excelled when engaged in experiential learning. Growing up in South Carolina as the daughter of educators, Fortune said following Reconstruction, a period following the Civil War, marked by legal and social change, many women were trained as teachers, and training often took place from mother to daughter and among sisters. A similar program in Worcester, with experiential learning as a driving theme, might greatly benefit preschool-age Black children, said Fortune, potentially supported by moms, grandmothers, churches, and other organizations. Augustus made Worcester her home sometime after leaving her birthplace in the Caribbean. Augustus recalled working for the YWCA Central Massachusetts in accounting when Linda Cavioli, the now retired executive director, asked her to join the board. Augustus has also been on the boards of agencies including the United Way, working with the Women's Initiative to help young girls, including with conflict resolution. Augustus also joined E4ALL, which provides resources to entrepreneurs. Augustus serves on the board of the Greater Worcester Community Foundation, where she said colleagues helped through grief and loss of a close friend. A scholarship fund for students in need helped channel purpose. For Amuo, education has been a career, a passion, and a vocation. A way to learn as well as teach and help students, fellow educators, and school administrations find important truths that may be overlooked. Her own experiences shaped her mission. In school, she told of a favorite book in which the concept of Pyrrhic victory played a major role, a victory that comes with an overwhelming cost. A teacher questioned the validity of the term, which takes its name from King Pyrrhus and his battle against the Romans. So yes, it's real. The teacher made Amuo look up the term in the dictionary in front of the class, and there it was in the dictionary pages. But the exercise drove another lesson home about a bias not explicitly stated, but keenly and deeply felt. Discussions of books set during the time of slavery that never address slavery, and superficial lessons on Columbus were all among experiences that showed Amuo why her presence in teaching mattered. I went into teaching. I wanted to make sure I was a face that looked like them. Questions touched on issues such as working on initiatives in a community such as Worcester, and when goals, projects, and resources may lead to differences of priorities, or even proprietary reaction, or common priorities but different views on how to go about them. The panelists said there are many views and strategies and shared some of their own experiences. Fortune said bringing her conflict resolution and mediation skills to bear can help, including language, to help put concerns in focus. For example, Fortune said, asking, "Tell me what you're thinking when I bring up this idea," can open a conversation with listening as well as speaking. Challenges can lead to a realization about making one's voice heard. Augustus recalled attending a meeting of the YWCA board in which she kept trying to talk, but others kept cutting her off. Finally, Cavioli told her, "You can't be too nice and to speak up. And that courtesy and consideration doesn't require giving up a person's own voice. What's more, speaking up can empower others to do the same." Lessons can also come of the form of understanding that within a community, not everyone is having the same experience or perspective. Fortune said when she first arrived in Worcester, she worked at the Prospect Hill Community Center. And so when I was getting introduced to the community, I quickly got the message that I wasn't really black enough, said Fortune. Fortune said she was told that some people simply wouldn't accept someone who actually hadn't grown up in the city. Fortune, who also talked subsequently with Worcester Magazine about this experience, said, "That is a common thing that black folks have to deal with, particularly if you don't walk or talk city style. Sometimes I see someone as African American and I'm approaching the community and not a recognized community member, and that is a reality that needs to be worked through. A gap between people of the same race, ethnicity, or community of origin based on class or upbringing can also be exploited to cause divisions," Fortune said. "Sometimes allowing someone else to shine helps bridge the divide," Fortune said. Among those who attended were Eric Butler, executive director of the Museum of Worcester, where the Worcester Women's History Project is based. Butler said, "History is also about a link to the present," noting Worcester's significance in the women's rights movement, including as a home for the first National Women's Rights Convention held in October 1850, and whose 175th anniversary the city celebrated last year. Lynn McKenney Lydeck is an actor who portrays Worcester suffragist and abolitionist Abby Kelly Foster and nurse Oxford native Clara Barton, who founded the American Red Cross. Lydeck, a member of the Worcester Women's History Project, said, "Our goal is to bring history to the community and be a part of it as time moves forward and community members make their own mark on history." Among those who attended the event were Joseph Afori of Worcester, volunteer for the Black Music Festival, and a family member of Amuo, who said he encouraged him to attend. "I'm really glad to be part of the city." And as one of the few men at the event said, the panel gave important perspectives on gender, race, and experiences women of all backgrounds face. "That is very important," said Afori, "that we have events looking at the perspectives and pushing for change for all women." Asked to reflect on the panel after the event, Gaffney shared thoughts by email. For highlights, Gaffney said, "The pure joy of seeing the panelists truly connect with each other and the audience on such a profound, uplifting, transcendent, courageous, and inspiring level, which translates to the audience and resonated with them in a deeply moving, heartfelt manner." Gaffney added, "Seeing three women of color express themselves so passionately was a magnificent, joyful, moving experience, and hopefully one that can become a yearly event." Looking to the future, Gaffney said, "This being our inaugural Conversations for Change event, let's hope the momentum that was sparked will ignite that fire in the belly of all those who were in attendance and take it forward to the next generation. On we go." What do organizers hope the audience has taken with them? Gaffney alluded to her message to the audience that We are the beginning spark for conversations with your families, friends, community members, and watch the change that is being created. Gaffney said, the more we as people have brave conversations for change, like those we had at our event, the more we can explore, connect, create, and inspire one another, which is my hope and goal for presenting this panel. And that wraps up today's Wisteria column. Although before we move on, I'd just like to point out proudly that Miss Tina Gaffney is not only featured in that article that I just read, but also is a volunteer here at Audio Journal. She hosts our show, The African American Experience, which airs every Saturday at noon and repeats again on Sunday at 4 p.m. So go ahead and check her out. That's Miss Tina Gaffney with the African American Experience, Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 4 p.m. And now we move on to a first-person article by Suzanne Graham Anderson titled, Suzanne Graham Anderson Says, Know That You Belong. Who are you? Exactly who you think I am. I attended an event and sat next to a gentleman who couldn't understand why so many people were coming over to greet me. He turned to me, adopting a patronizing tone, and asked, who are you? What is it that you do, and why are so many people saying hello to you? He seemed shocked that I was in this space and that he didn't recognize me, but others clearly did. His tone suggested that he felt entitled to an explanation of my presence, as if I needed his permission to be there. I answered, I am who I am, and I do what I do. Then left it at that. I could tell he wasn't pleased with my response, but honestly, his clarity was not my concern. As a woman, and especially as a black woman, I often encounter strange questions. Sometimes they come from other women, but more frequently from men. I'm not sure if they intend to humble me or to force me to prove that I belong, but I know I belong in every room I enter. I do not owe anyone an explanation for my presence or my worth. It was disheartening but not surprising to me when I shared this encounter and saw that so many women resonated with that experience. It highlights a common struggle in which others try to make some feel they don't belong in certain spaces because of their own personal issues. Those moments can really shake someone's confidence and make them question their place, even when they know they deserve to be there. Recently, I've had the privilege of advising several women and young girls who face similar questions about their place in various spaces, spaces where others expressed disbelief at their accomplishments and presence. Personally, I believe these questions stem from their own biases and insecurities. Still, my focus is to ensure that these women feel confident in themselves, in their accomplishments, and that they don't question whether they are worthy or if they belong, and that they will be just as confident when they leave as when they entered. While my advice is tailored for each person, what I tell anyone facing this challenge is, you are worthy. You don't need to explain your presence. You don't need validation. You belong in every room. You are who you think you are. I wrote this for the women who have experienced this. I want them to understand that the burden is not on them to prove that they belong. It is on the others to be kinder. No one has the right to question whether you belong. If you have this experience, I hope you have the courage to stand up for yourself and the confidence to know that you belong. I will also encourage you to be kind to yourself and to others, because kindness is contagious, and we need more of it. And to all the women who reach out to me because something I said in a post, a speaking engagement, or at an event resonated, thank you. Know that I see you, and I am sending you love and positivity. Suzanne Graham Anderson is the founder and CEO of the Positively Suzanne brand, whose services include personal and professional coaching, speaking engagements, and the Sipping Tea with Suzanne show. She welcomes visits at positivelysuzanne.com. And our next article is titled, New Pool at Worcester JCC to Help Cool Summer Heat, written by Sarah Connell Sanders. At my first ever Worcester Wahoos swim meet, I was seated in last place, which meant they put me in lane 6, the slow lane. It was the 50-yard backstroke, and I could see Coach Ted swinging his arms and blasting his whistle above my head from the sidelines. What I couldn't see was the competition, but I felt sure that I must be far behind everyone else. To that point, at 8 years old, I was extraordinarily average, a distractible student, an unexceptional ball player, a shy girl. I saw the flags and thrust one last dolphin into the wall before flipping over and realizing, to the complete and utter shock of myself and everyone else on the pool deck, I had won. Better yet, I liked it. For the next decade and a half, I chased that feeling. Soon I was spending as much time at the Worcester JCC as I was at school. I volunteered to teach swim lessons in the summertime. Then I became a lifeguard, my first job. My swimming career culminated at a Division I university, all thanks to that first spark in Lane 6, and coaches like Kelly, Ginger, Ann, Gina, and Tommy. Now I'm teaching my own children to swim at the JCC pool. They hold on tight, and I kick on my back, swimming lap after lap inside the same four walls where I spent thousands of hours practicing my sport. Swimming is incredibly cyclical in that way. I was delighted to learn that the first order of business for the brand new executive director of the Worcester JCC, Rochelle Riche, was a renovation of the outdoor pool. Before her homecoming, Rochelle Riche spent 13 years at the Asheville JCC in a variety of leadership roles, including director of development, membership, and community life and Jewish learning. Her first job, however, was as a camp counselor at the Worcester JCC. Like me, she's a lifer. Last week, I sat down with Riche to ask her about the outdoor pool renovation. Everything is new except for the footprint, she told me. New plumbing, new lights, new tile, new plaster, new deck, same hole. The pool season is set to begin on Memorial Day weekend and will be available for members, summer camp, small birthday parties, and private rentals throughout the season. Riche calls the state-of-the-art facility, including a new splash pad, the best staycation in town. I was pleased to learn that summer memberships are available for Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend. Special member late night events and grills are also on the docket. As for my burgeoning swimming career as a mother of two, there will be morning lap swim offered on the weekends corresponding with splash pad times and weekend outdoor pool hours that have been extended from noon to 5:45 p.m. I'd like this to be your outdoor living room for the summer, said Riche. I'm sold. Community members can schedule their summer events at the new pool party tent, available during regular open hours for up to 20 guests, at what Riche refers to as very reasonable rates. The pool will be available for rent on Saturday and Sunday evenings from 7 to 10 p.m. for private parties. Truth be told, I'm already taking full advantage. On Tuesday, June 9th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., I will be hosting a Worcester Wahoos reunion for my fellow swimmers. Tickets for the new lap, a poolside benefit for JCC swim scholarships, are $25. A cash bar, courtesy of MS Walker, will be on site with light snacks. All who learn to swim at the JCC pool and want to experience the new facilities are encouraged to join us. Go fight, win tonight. Boogie on down, all right, all right. See you there, Wahoos. And next, we have some Poetry Town for you. This one's titled Smoke Alarm, written by Kathy Chincharik. I know it doesn't mean to. I know it means no harm. But when I use my oven, off goes my smoke alarm. The alarm shrieks so loudly, I go bounding up each stair. And beneath the smoke alarm, I must go and place a chair. While I stand up on the chair, there's a button I must press to stop the endless shrieking. I am under so much stress. When it stops, I look around, but there's no smoke I can see. This crazy smoke alarm, I know, will be the death of me. Kathy Chincharik is a freelance writer and has been published in several newspapers, magazines, and anthologies. And now, if you're looking for some things to do in the coming days in and around Worcester, we've got you covered. First up, pick some plants for a cause. Home gardeners and houseplant lovers have a big day ahead on May 9th, starting in the morning with the Community Harvest Project's Plant-a-Palooza Plant Sale. The Grafton Farm, which grows and donates hundreds of thousands of pounds of fresh produce each year to combat hunger in the Worcester area, will be selling annual vegetables, herbs, heirloom tomatoes, and peppers for the home vegetable gardener, plus berry bushes and pollinator-friendly flowers, as well as succulents for those who like to keep something green in every room. The sale also coincides with the farm's first Saturday morning open to drop-in volunteers this season. So if you want to help, you can stick around and pitch in. So that's Plantapalooza, May 9th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Community Harvest Project, 37 Wheeler Road in North Grafton. It is a free event, and you can go to community-harvest.org for more info. Next, one organ, no anchovies. Pedals, Pipes, and Pizza on May 9th at First Baptist Church of Worcester is a free event designed to introduce young people 8 and up to the pipe organ, an amazing instrument but only found in specific locations. The day consists of several demonstrations of the organ, including music from Star Wars to Bach, a video broadcast from the Royal Albert Hall in London, and an opportunity to play and see inside the church's pipe organ. And of course, there's pizza for lunch. Presented by the Worcester chapter of the American Guild of Organists, parents and teachers are encouraged to attend. So that is Pedals, Pipes, and Pizza from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on May 9th at the First Baptist Church of Worcester at 111 Park Avenue in Worcester. It's a free event. You can register that morning or in advance at worcesterago.org. Next, branch out at the Worcester Public Library. The spring greenery continues at the Worcester Public Library's plant swap on the afternoon of May 9th, where you can bring a houseplant you don't need or come to pick up something new. If bringing plants or cuttings to trade, make sure they are healthy and label them accurately. Plants should be in soil and cuttings in water. You can also come simply to learn more about houseplant care. So that is the plant swap from 2 to 3 p.m. May 9th at the Worcester Public Library, 3 Salem Square in Worcester. That's a free event. You can go to mywpl.org for more information. And last but not least, Lake Artists Spotlighted in Webster. Fins and Feathers, a small works art show of paintings by local artist Linda Littleton, is on display this month in the Cafe Gallery at Book Lovers Gourmet in Webster. Littleton is often referred to as the Lake Artist, with many of her paintings set on and around Webster Lake. Her watercolors, prints, and acrylics at the show depict birds and fish. An artist reception with light refreshments will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on May 15th. Regular hours at Book Lovers Gourmet are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday. So that is Fins and Feathers by Linda Littleton, artist reception from 5 to 7 p.m. on May 15th at the Book Lovers Gourmet, 72 East Main Street in Webster. The event is free, and you can go to bookloversgourmet.com for more information. And now we're going to send you over to Catherine for some more articles from Worcester Magazine.
Starting off this segment, we're going to read an article by Richard Duckett, The Lunchbox by Boylston's Lazor Brothers premieres in Berkeley. In February and March, Daniel and Patrick Lazor, who grew up in Boylston, saw their musical, Nightside Songs, performed at the off-Broadway Claire Toe Theater at the Lincoln Center Theater in New York City. A special performance of the musical was presented by Broadway in Worcester at Clark University last year after Nightside Songs had premiered at Philadelphia Theater Company and American Repertory Theater in Cambridge. In 2024, their musical We Live in Cairo was produced at the Off-Broadway Theater New York Theater Workshop. A rare thing. All the world's a coast-to-coast stage now for the award-winning Lazors, who in April headed out to the Berkeley Repertory Theater in Berkeley, California, to get ready for a world premiere of their latest musical endeavor, The Lunchbox. The musical is scheduled to run May 17th to June 28th. The show is a musical adaptation of the Indian director Ritesh Batra's internationally acclaimed 2013 film, The Lunchbox, set in Mumbai, and described as a story with heart, humor, and hope. "We're very blessed, especially this year," said Patrick Lazor, as the brothers were talking on the phone recently from Berkeley. It's a rare thing, especially in this business where so much is unpredictable. We just have to hope it keeps coming. The Lazors started writing musicals together as teenagers, and three of their shows were staged by Calliope Productions in Boylston beginning in 2009 with The Tribulations of the Millionaire, a musical set against the backdrop of the stock market crash of 1929. The Lunchbox is our first collaboration outside of us as brothers, Patrick Lazor said. They usually combine to write a musical's book, music, and lyrics. But with The Lunchbox, the book is Batra's, as are some of the lyrics with music and co-lyrics by The Lazors. The Lazors and Batra have been in touch for about 5 to 6 years, about a collaboration, Daniel said. Batra has a fondness for musical theater, he noted. Mumbai has a well-developed lunchbox delivery system, but in the Lunchbox, a neglected wife's lunch delivery meant for her husband goes to a widower accountant who is about to retire. He sends the unknown sender a note, and then notes start being sent back and forth as an unlikely bond and even romance between the two develops. It's beautiful, Patrick said of the story. The musical is being directed by Tony Award winner Rachel Chavkin of Hadestown, and the total ensemble of cast, swings, and understudies of over 20 includes Manu Narayan from Broadway's Bombay Dreams and Apple TV's Your Friends and Neighbors as the widower, Kuhu Verma from Berkeley's Rep Monsoon Wedding and Octet and Off-Broadway's Heather the Musical as the wife, and performer and actress Vibhu Mohan. It's our biggest show, Daniel Lazor said of the size of the cast. It's really magical. It takes a lot to make a new show. Meanwhile, Berkeley Repertory Theater has a strong history of producing shows that subsequently make it to Broadway, including Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations, Amelia, Galileo, and Dana H. Such collaborations and relationships take time. It takes a lot to make a new show, Daniel Lazor said. Previously, there was a new workshop for The Lunchbox at Berkeley Rep in November and a staging workshop before that. Recently, there was a meet and greet. Ritesh knows the story. What we offered is the knowledge of musicals and the way musicals function, said Patrick Lazor. An important part of collaboration is trusting each other. We trust him, and he really trusts us. Which is not always the case with some writers who have been known to look askance at the very thought of their work becoming a musical. What's different about this is Ritesh really respects musicals. I think it makes the show better because of it. He was pushing us to go bigger, said Daniel. He was very embracing of the bigger musical theater conventions. But at the same time, the brothers wanted to retain the story's charm. It was special. Both Daniel and Patrick graduated from St. John's High School in Shrewsbury, then respectively Columbia University and Boston College. Both live in New York City. Their parents, Paul and Nell Lazor, always had music playing in their Boylston home. The brothers recall in earlier interview, the music included show tunes from Les Miserables, Jesus Christ Superstar. The two first combined their talents when a high school task was to write a 15 to 30 minute theater piece. They started writing We Live in Cairo in 2013. The musical follows students amid the tumult of the Egyptian revolution that began January 25, 2011. They meet in a small apartment above Tahrir Square and do their part in inspiring millions of Egyptians to take to the streets. The initial inspiration for We Live in Cairo came from Patrick Lazor seeing a photograph taken by Ed Wu, published in the New York Times, showing Egyptian youths gathered around a glowing laptop during the Arab Spring. Both brothers were moved that the young people depicted were putting their lives on the line. The musical also follows through the aftermath of what followed as escalating division and violence led to a military crackdown and the young revolutionaries of Cairo must weigh the cost of how or even whether to keep their dreams of change alive. A staged reading at New York Theater Workshop in 2017 helped lead to its world premiere at American Repertory Theater in 2019. The show is a Richard Rodgers Award for musical theater winner. The title of Nightside Songs comes from the late American cultural critic Susan Sontag's observation that illness is the night side of life. To counteract that, the musical is described as a communal musical experience. The central storyline involves a young woman named Jasmine from Worcester who goes on a journey that includes feeling a lump in her breast, cancer diagnosis, treatment, remission, marriage, new diagnosis, and more treatment. The musical also takes illness-related but divergent forays to other settings and times. Caregivers are also in the spotlight, and the actors break the fourth wall to lead the audience in singing the Lasers' original songs along the way. Laura Collins Hughes, in a review for the New York Times of the Claire Toe Theater production, called Nightside Songs an unusually solacing musical about the isolation of illness, the comfort of other people, and the refuge of art. Not for an instant is Nightside Songs emotionally overwrought, but by the end, some of its audiences quite likely to be overcome. It was special, Patrick Laser said of the production. Trying to live in the moment. Now with the Lunchbox, he was asked if he hopes this show can also make it to Off-Broadway or Broadway. I think New York would be the goal. I think London would be a great audience for a show like this, he said. Building momentum is important, Daniel Laser said in that regard. You write the show, you produce the show, then you build an audience around it. It's a beloved film. Word of mouth is so important. But the brothers are also enjoying themselves at the same time. We're trying to live in the moment and be blessed that this is happening and a plan for future life, Daniel Laser said. Craig S. Seaman writes, North Central Mass guitarist Mark Marcus to perform at Bull Run. It's a special announcement about this show. It will perform at 8 p.m. on May 8th at Bull Run on Great Road in Shirley. Tickets are $22.50. A fixture of the North Central Mass music scene since he was a teenager, Mark Marcus, now in his early 70s and showing no signs of slowing down, has been communicating through music for half a century. But on May 8th at the Bull Run in Shirley, Marcus, who cites Ravi Shankar, Frank Zappa, John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, Miles Davis, and the Beatles as some of his musical heroes, is going to be combining the best of both worlds, playing original tunes as well as putting his personal stamp on beloved covers. Following the rich tradition of legendary guitarist Chet Atkins and Jeff Beck of interpreting popular tunes on the guitar, Marcus, who has built a reputation and following for playing original jazz, jazz improvisational, and reinterpretations of jazz classics, insists he's not doing covers. Marcus, who is the 2016 recipient of Worcester Music Awards Lifetime Achievement Award, will be joined by trumpeter Jerry Sabatini, keyboardist Paul Roshan, pianist Anne-Marie Corvu, guitarist and bassist Jimmy Morrell, and drummer Dave Bergeron. Whether you're a die-hard Mark Marcus fan or just a newbie, you'll never know what to expect from Marcus. He's an absolute guitar virtuoso and one of a kind. Next, we ride the berm along the highway through the trees. Ned Trigolo writes, Worcester folk band Berm has reached a major milestone. Their debut studio album is here. Highway Through the Trees, released April 24th, is 10 tracks of the following ingredients. Autobiographical Reflection from singer-guitarist Dan Lambert. Banjo Plucking from Z. Harris. Sweet Cello Lines from Andy Thomas. Warm Piano from Gretchen Neff Lambert. And Percussion, Bass, Pedal Steel, and Backing Vocals from a wider cast of musical contributors. According to Lambert, it's been a long time coming, and fans have been anticipating it for a good long while. We've been playing some of these for more than a year, Lambert said. Highway Through the Trees and Snowstorm were some of the first songs we would play as the core of the band. People who have seen us more than once have heard those many times. Origin Stories. Leave This Place, the opening track, is a very lyrical, straightforward look back in a time that Lambert said he wrote about tracing back through my own origin story in places and times where I don't really belong. I look back with detached curiosity and not a desire to return to those places. At first, we only hear his voice and his guitar, and over the course of the song, he brings us south to the hot Georgia sun, a nameless suburban apartment complex, his grandparents' house, as the chords go mostly unresolved, pairing with the lyrics, park on the street, but never in the driveway. On Cigarette, Lambert misses an old friend, but wonders whether that feeling is real or whether he's just looking at those memories through those rose-colored glasses. I used to be a smoker, and back when I was smoking, I would often wake up in the morning with an image in my head of what it would be like to smoke that first cigarette after however long I'd been asleep, and it was this idealized false memory. And then I'd smoke the first cigarette and feel nauseous, he said. Lambert realizes eventually, though, that his friend, unlike the first cigarette, really was as he remembered, and that he's right to miss them so much. And now that you've gone, I sometimes think it might be the same, a rosy rearview mirror in my mind's eye. But no, I remember right, I remember right, he sings. More in common than thought. On Epilogue, Lambert pictures his grandmother, like her own mother and grandmother before her, struggling with Alzheimer's dementia, aimless in an endless epilogue. It's the story of how I imagine her during COVID in the memory care unit, all on her own, seeing death nearby and confronting it about what's waiting for her. Lambert said, it's also about how death works on its own calendar, and that can lead to really tragic situations like someone living far beyond the point where they had a solid chance at dignity or happiness in their life. Heron is an atheist reconciliation with his religious family, at one point telling a relative, we're all lost and you feel found, but you realize your guess is as good as mine, but eventually realizing they all have more in common than he thought. It's mostly about my mom as a good example. Growing up, she always saw herons as a symbol of God's love for her, so whenever I see a heron flying by, I think of the loving God that she believes in, even though that differs from my own beliefs. Lambert recalls one rowdy teenage night on Song for Nate, a thank you to an older guy who looked out for him when he was 16 and didn't know better. I drank too much, dropped a lit cigarette on the upholstery of a van we were riding in, burned a big hole in it, caused some damage. The person driving could have embarrassed me in front of the people I looked up to. Instead, he kept it very quiet. He never brought it up to me. He never talked to anyone else about it. And we have drifted apart, but I still feel a genuine appreciation for the way he handled that when it would have been so easy to just be mad. The memory Lambert built Snowstorm on is much more recent, a winter road trip with friends where the snow surrounding them was blinding like white lace curtains on the interstate and draped along the trees. There was a big snowstorm rolling in, and we got snowed in and spent a long weekend just playing music in a snowed-in cabin, and I think of this song as looking through photos from that time. On Calcified, he explores the idea that opportunities disappear as you grow, or as I once heard someone say when discussing why usually popular films like Star Wars often have main characters who are college age mostly. People get more specific with age. Doors close, and it's a natural progression from wide open to narrow, and I think that's a natural part of growing up and building your life into something that works for you. But the dynamic can still feel claustrophobic. Finding your way through the woods. Winter Blue is a shorter track about that time of February and March in New England when you're just dying for warm weather again and longing to be experiencing the beauty and power of nature. And Last Time is a recollection of Lambert's first time experiencing sleep paralysis as a teenager, which led him to think about his mortality for the first time in a way he never had before. My assumption was that I had died, and my reaction to that was mostly curiosity. I was curious what I was going to see, what I was going to experience in the next moments without a lot of fear or confusion. I felt confident I knew what was going on. And looking back at that, I find it comforting to some degree and also puzzling. The title track, Highway Through the Trees, hangs out in between Calcified and Winter Blue. Lambert said that song, which opens with the warmest riff on the album, looks back on one very vivid memory of eating breakfast with his grandfather, was the perfect choice to give its name to the full record. I think it functions as a summary almost of the album itself. I think that my hope in the way that this would be received, if someone were to sit down and listen to the album in its entirety, I hope it feels like you're in the woods, seeing flashes of light from the distance, something that sits with you for a while, makes you think about things differently. Next, Worcester Magazine's Salute to Mother's Day.
You are listening to Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. And now it's time for this week's cover story. Queen Worthy Celebrations for Mom. Consider local markets, bold performances, and coffee shop surprises. Written by Meg Trigolo. May means, among many other things, Mother's Day. And as always, Worcester has a wide range of ways to celebrate, both on the holiday itself and throughout the weekend. While countless restaurants offer their traditional brunch or Mother's Day-themed menus May 10th, several venues and community groups are throwing parties that will be on the unique side. On May 9th, the day before Mother's Day, we'll begin with the Mum's the Word Artesian Market at Creative Hub Worcester, which will be only the second major event at the new Creative Hub location on Ionic Avenue after its April 16th grand opening. It's a special market that we're curating with handmade goods, meaningful gifts, sweet treats, build-your-own bouquets, anything you're thinking of for the mother figure in your life, Creative Hub Chief Operations Officer Kelly Kosiorek said. We're excited to do a bit of a different market, where it's not just artists and vendors, but fun, experiential things. According to Kosiorek, more than 20 vendors will set up in the building's former gymnasium, including Worcester fashion brand Cosmic Unicorns, caterers Charcuterie Woo, a build-your-own bouquet booth, and a whole host of fine artists and craftspeople selling their wares. The Saturday market, which will run from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., will be something of a callback to Creative Hub's roots. Much of the Creative Hub staff used to work Start on the Street, and its smaller sister festival, Start at the Station, each year, and Kosiorek said those memories make the first vendor market in the new building all the more exciting. I'm hoping we get a great turnout, and everyone can find something for that person they're looking for, and we can really kick off market season, Kosiorek said. We have a cool mix of artists and vendors, so I'll be curious where people are gravitating, but all of them are handmade, genuine gifts. If your mom loves energetic performances and colorful fashion, and if everyone in your party is old enough to handle some rowdy adult humor, Queer the Scene's monthly Best Little Drag Brunch in Worcester will have something for you May 9th at the Cocktail Garden on Franklin Street. The Mother's Day, but make it drag brunch begins with a buffet at noon, which typically includes omelets, waffles, fruit, eggs, bacon, and more, and bartenders will be slinging brunch cocktails. Think mimosas and Bloody Marys. Throughout the meal, the lineup of drag queens will mingle with the crowd, including mainstays Victoria Obvious, Diva D, and this month's featured performer, La Paloma. At 1:30 p.m., they'll take the stage and likely invite you to get up, dance, and get in on the fun. We're hoping people bring their moms to drag brunch, especially if your mom has never been to a drag brunch and is curious, Queer the Scene co-founder David Connor told Worcester Magazine in March. We'll bring the queens, you bring your mom. If you're looking to do something a little more adventurous Sunday morning, you can pick up a treat along with coffee at the Fuel America Grove Street Cafe, which will run a Mother's Day-themed market from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We've done specials where you could buy a coffee and a flower for mom before, but this is the first time we're doing it as a market, cafe owner Nilu Monhageg said. I find that usually, a lot of the time, people just bump into our markets, they're here for the coffee shop, and they see the event and get excited and stick around. Mohageg's Cafe frequently hosts events, from seasonal markets to summertime car meets to a yearly fashion show, and the most recent was a vintage and secondhand clothing pop-up in April that drew a crowd. The bread and butter of our space is that we're always open to being a third space, and honestly a fourth space, for engaging and gathering the community, Mohageg said. We've seen it time and time again, be very popular and fruitful for the vendors, and it adds a fun aspect to the coffee shop. You're not just coming in for your usual morning coffee, but you're getting some additional flavor. The Mother's Day market will be on the smaller side as far as events at Fuel go, and the day's vendors will be Sweet Avocado, Melanie McLaughlin, Vivalicious Chocolates, and florist Poppy Petals. One of our barista's mother-in-law makes candies and is bringing her candle company over. We have an earring workshop that you can do with your mom, so you can come and sign up and they'll teach you how to make earrings. We'll also have a floral pop-up with a cute setup for buying arrangements, and we'll have a chocolatier as well, Mohageg said. You can pop into the coffee shop, grab mom a coffee, and grab mom some nice gifts too. Since Mohageg opened her shop, she has run an annual special that includes a Mother's Day flower with a drink, and she predicted the most popular stop at the upcoming market would be the Poppy Petals table. Everyone loves a good flower. Last year, we did a colored baby's breath flower that came attached to your coffee cup. And the year before, it was a rose, Mohageg said. This year, I don't know what to expect because this florist does her own thing every time. Last year, we had her was for our winter festival, and she did vases in a coffee carrier. And that wraps up our Mother's Day cover story for Worcester Magazine. Now we send you back over to Catherine for some more articles.
You're listening to a reading of Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal. We continue with a column by Margaret Smith called I Did This Today, which is an occasional column of firsthand experiences. Today she writes, Twilight on the Clark University Batwalk. Before we get started, I'm going to disclose to you right now, I love bats. Bats are not creepy or scary. They're cute. They're super cute. Some species wiggle their ears when they eat, and they're dazzling in their variety. This is a completely pro-bat column. Bats flit through our collective dreams, emissaries of night, going about their batty business as we draw them into our myths and movies. So when Clark University reached out to ask if I wanted to go along on a bat walk, really, what answer was there besides yes? I'm changing up my schedule. I'm going on that bat walk. The bat walk was one of several hosted by Morgan Ruel, associate professor of Clark's Department of Sustainability and Social Justice, whose work in environmental sustainability includes research into bats and their ways. Like all animals, bats have found and made their place as inhabitants and shapers of their environment. And also, like most animals, their environment is changing due to human activity and not always with optimal results. Facts. Looking for bats? There's an app for that. On April 28th at about 7 p.m., a spirited trek from Clark University's Red Square led to an urban oasis literally like a portal between worlds. The boardwalk along Coe's Reservoir, commonly known as Coe's Pond, where participants, including several students, got ready on a cool spring evening to track the bats. Technology provided a boost by means of an app, Echo Meter, made by Wildlife Acoustics, which participants downloaded to their phones. A companion device plugged into the charging port of the phone activates the app, which does several neat things. It allows the user to hear a chirping sound indicating the echolocation of bats, primarily to scope out their prey, which for our local bats consists of insects. The app provides the user with potential species in range. The ones that kept showing up on most participants' phone screens were the big brown bat and the silver-haired bat. The odds are most, in fact, the big brown bat, an ubiquitous species in these parts, with fuzzy bodies and charming elfin faces. When a rapid chirping sound would come up on the participants' phones, we would all look to the sky, which was fading from a soft bluish purple of twilight to the dark blue of true night. But in that passing space, the bats appeared, distant and yet enticingly close, in movements both erratic and purposeful. Their angular silhouettes and wing flappings marked them for sure as bats, and each one evoked whispers and exclamations of delight and success. There's something quietly thrilling about standing outside in the growing darkness on the boardwalk, overlooking the rippling water, and looking up at what some aptly describes as a world in plain sight, yet often unnoticed. Some of the conversation revolved around how many insects bats eat. They eat a lot, and that alone might be a good reason for people to warm to them. Looking at the lights along the opposite side of the pond, Ruel noted that bats may be drawn not so much to the light, but to the insects that are drawn to it. They get a bad rap. With the approach of the Irish celebration of Beltane, one of four bonfire festivals in the traditional Gael calendar, I thought of how bats became associated with Halloween. One reason, surely, is that if you're going to hold a bonfire, insects may beam on, which bats in pursuit. It all makes sense. By the way, Samhain, the bonfire festival of November 1st, is the ancestor of Halloween. So there we are. Oh, and the novel Dracula, written by an Irishman, Bram Stoker, who made the folklore connection between vampires and bats a staple of goth and pop culture. Habitat loss is always a concern. Ruel also answered a few questions and shared some thoughts by email. Ruel said the walks typically draw 10 to 20 students and include a presentation on bats, including the effects of white nose syndrome on hibernating bats. Populations have declined by more than 90% for several previously common species, landing them on federal and state lists of threatened and endangered species, said Ruel. The fungus causes bats to arouse repeatedly from torpor during hibernation, burning through the fat reserves they need to survive winter. Some migratory species are impacted by wind turbines. Habitat loss is always a concern, especially roosting habitat. Ruel said all native bats in Massachusetts are insectivores, and they play an important role in controlling insects that impact crop production and public health. My concern is that increased reliance on pesticides to control insects, a service bats have long provided, could complicate their recovery by reducing insect prey and exposing bats to chemical stressors. They are simply amazing animals. It's always good to bust some bat myths, including their association with bats, witches, and hair. Their echolocation is extraordinarily precise, which is why the old myth about bats getting tangled in people's hair has no basis. Bats are often unfairly associated with disease risk. Direct transmission of diseases from bats to people is actually very rare, especially when bats are left undisturbed. Rabies can occur, which is why people should never handle bats, but the public health risk to people who do not handle bats is very low. Ruel credits his opportunity to work with several well-known bat biologists early in his career in both Wyoming and the Mojave Desert in California and Nevada. Why bats? They're simply amazing animals that have evolved an entirely unique way of life. They provide so many important benefits for humans. In other parts of the world, they're important pollinators and seed dispersers, and yet we consistently underappreciate them. The bat walk came with ideas for helping bats, including becoming a bat ambassador for Bat Conservation International. Bats really need our attention, Ruel said. Their population declines over the last two decades are among the most dramatic documented for any group of mammals. I encourage everyone to learn more about bats from Bat Conservation International. There are a lot of ways to get involved and support their work. In case you wondered, the vampire bat is not one of our native species. That said, a while back, my husband and I decided to adopt a vampire bat through the World Wildlife Fund and received several lovely items, including a certificate of adoption and a large, plushy vampire bat, several sizes bigger than an actual vampire bat. A few years later, we symbolically adopted a warthog, too. Somewhere out over Coase Reservoir and other bodies of water, insects are gathering, and with them, the bats, wanting only to do what bats do, get enough to eat to sustain themselves, nurture future generations of bats, and elegantly go about their work as proper children of the night. In the Last Call column, Margaret Smith puts the spotlight on Robert Collins, school custodian, outdoorsman. For more than 50 years, East Brookfield resident Robert Collins has been turning up at his job as a custodian at Tantasqua Regional High School in neighboring Sturbridge. In that time, at a school of about 1,200 students, he's come to know many generations. Collins said, "Sometimes you go to events and there are fathers and fathers and fathers, and sometimes the kid will bring his father that I had in this school, and grandfather would come over and shoot the breeze with me." Over the decades, many students have come to see him as an adult they can rely on in an uncertain world, and their trust and admiration is something he has come to cherish. As his 90th birthday approaches this month, Collins will be moving to part-time May 30th, but has no plans or interest in retiring. "My mother was 94," Collins said. "I think it's genes. Any exercising, what you eat? Don't drink, don't smoke." Besides, he said, he's gotten in plenty of adventures, including skydiving, flying lessons, and a stint in the Navy. Add to that building and raising a family in a custom log cabin in the leafy woods and embracing a life of outdoor activities such as hunting and fishing, including 3 treks to Alaska. Collins recently talked about his work and a life lived long and well. "How did you find your way here?" "I was originally working for an outfit in Worcester, Granger Construction. Things got slow and they let me go. And then we were expecting our first child, so I needed to get something that was a little more sturdy. I went to Tantasqua and I got the job. I have been here ever since." "What's a typical school day?" "I get there quite early because I like the exercise. I have to light the building up. I have to clean the nurse's office. There are a couple of rooms you have to clean, too. And then there's a guy at each door, maintenance men, and I'm one of them. You've got to wait there. You have to make sure that it's students coming through and not anybody else." "What are some of the biggest changes since the time you started?" "The children, everything. There's a lot more things going on. Society, things change. When I originally went over there, the students could smoke in the bathroom, and even the teachers smoked in the teacher's room." "Is there a part of the job you really love?" "The camaraderie with the kids. They all speak to me. 'Hey, Bob, I'm the oldest guy in the school.' People must ask you, 'Why don't you retire?'" "Oh, yes, they're always asking. But my mother had a saying, 'To rest is to rust,' she told me. She said, 'As long as you can keep going,' because when she was working, when you were 65, you had to leave." You have been listening to a reading of Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Catherine Thornton, reading with Julie Standrovich. Thank you for listening.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2363. 877-382-2363.